Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the 6th canto, chapter 9, entitled Appearance of the Demon Pitrasura, text number 50. Svayam nishreyasam vidvan navaktya gyaya karmahi narati rogino patyam vanchato pi bishaktamam. Svayam nikshreyasam vidvan navyaktyanjaya karmahi narati rogino patyam panchato bhishaktamaha. Svayam nishreyasam vidvan navaktyajnaya karmahi narati rogino patyam panchato bhishaktamaha. Mantras, please. Svayam, personally. Nishreyasam, the supreme goal of life, namely the means of obtaining ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidvan, one who is accomplished in devotional service. Na, not. Vakti, teaches. Agyaya, unto a foolish person, not conversant with the ultimate goal of life, karma, fruit of activities. He, indeed, na, not, rati, administers, roginaha, unto the patient. Apatyam, something unconsumable. Vanchataha, desiring. Api, although, Bishaktamaha, an experienced physician. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages the patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Purport. Here's the difference between the benedictions awarded by the demigods and those awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Devotees of the demigods ask for benedictions simply for sense gratification, and therefore they have been described in Bhagavad Gita 7.20 as bereft of intelligence. Kamaistais tair hritigyana prapadyante nyadevata tang tang niyamam ashtaya prakritya niyataksvaya. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Conditioned souls are generally bereft of intelligence because of profound desires for sense gratification. They do not know what benedictions to ask. Therefore, non-devotees are advised in the shastras to worship various demigods to achieve material benefits. For example, if one wants a beautiful wife, he is advised to worship Uma, the goddess Durga. If one wants to be cured of a disease, he is advised to worship the sun god. All requests for benedictions from the demigods, however, are due to material lust. The benedictions will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation, along with those who bestow them. If one approaches Lord Vishnu for benedictions, the Lord will give him a benediction that will help him return home, back to Godhead. This is also confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. Tesham satata yukta nang bhajatam pritipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tang yenamam upayantite. Lord Vishnu, or Lord Krishna, instructs a devotee who constantly engages in His service how to approach Him at the end of his material body. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma karma chme devyam evang yo veti tattvataha tektva dehang punarjanma naiti mam eti sorduna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is the benediction of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. After giving up his body, a devotee returns home, back to Godhead. A devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give him such benedictions, despite the devotee's prayers. Therefore, people who are very attached to material life do not generally become devotees of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they become devotees of the demigods, kamaistaistar hritigyana prapadyante nidevata. The benedictions of the demigods, however, are condemned in the Bhagavad Gita. Antavattu palangte shangtad bhavatyalpa medasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. A non-Vaishnava, one who is not engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered a fool with a small quantity of brain substance. Om Gyana Timuranda Syaganantana Shalaka Chakshur Unmili Tangi Natasmaya Sri Guravin Maha Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasai Buddhale Srimate Piladananda Swami Tone Namang Vishnu Padai Krishna Prasai Buddhale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paschiyati Ate Shicharane. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for allowing me the opportunity to speak. It's a wonderful opportunity to render service and to purify myself. So this particular section in the Bhagavatam deals with a very interesting subject matter. What's happening is because of material desire for sense gratification, the demigods headed by Lord Indra have rather severely messed things up. And now they're directly approaching Lord Vishnu to ask him to fix it all. As Mukunda Dutt touched upon in a previous class, he mentioned how it's rather amazing, but these demigods, even though they have such immediate access to Lord Vishnu, they don't ask from Lord Vishnu for the supreme ultimate goal. Vishnu can very readily give liberation from this material existence and grant entrance into Vaikuntha. But yet, what is it the demigods are requesting? They're requesting for the security of their sense gratification. And I found that rather interesting. So, in the Gita, it's described, Krishna describes in the second chapter, text 62 and 63, that from contemplating these objects of the senses, then attachment develops. And from this attachment, we develop lust within our heart. And from this lust comes anger. From anger comes bewilderment, from delusion. From delusion comes bewilderment of memory. And then when our memory is bewildered, all our intelligence is lost. And once we've lost our intelligence, then we fall back down to the material pool. In other words, we fall into ignorance and delusion. So it's rather amazing, this particular pastime, with what's happening. Because what happened is Indra killed Tvashta. And now Indra killed Vishwarupa, Tvashta's son. And so Tvashta had a guru, and that guru gave him the Narayan Kavacha. And Tvashta had a son, Vishwarupa. And Tvashta gave Vishwarupa the Narayan Kavacha. And then when the demigods, because of Lord Indra's offenses, were missing their guru, it was recommended to them that they take Vishwarupa as their spiritual master. And then Vishwarupa instructed Lord Indra how to chant this Narayan Kavacha for protection and strength so he could defeat the demons. So then after Indra defeated the demons, Indra gets disturbed in his mind that Vishwarupa's offering oblations secretly to the demons. And so then Indra kills Vishwarupa. And then his father, Tvashta, gets so angry that he summons forth this gigantic demon. And the demigods become so fearful that they go running to Vishnu, requesting him to fix it all. But what's even more interesting is that Vishnu doesn't just fix it himself. In this section that we're reading right now from the Bhagavatam, Lord Vishnu is responding to the prayers from the demigods, and he's actually rebuking the demigods. He's saying, these aren't prayers befitting for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you approach Vishnu, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should approach with non-materialistic desires. He's saying that these prayers aren't worthy, your desire isn't worthy of being offered to me. He's saying that these are prayers of non-devotees. Rather, you should go pray to the demigods, but you are demigods, so who do you have to turn to? And so it's interesting how this lust, this extreme desire for gratifying the senses, can make one completely bewildered and ignorant or in blindness. It can actually blind people as to what the real reality is. And we see that so many times everywhere around us in this world. Just look at what so many people are doing. They're doing such abominable activities as if nobody's even watching. They think they're pulling it off in secret, you know, satisfying their senses in private, doing so many things, you know, whether it be on the personal level, on the national level. Like, for instance, everyone's probably familiar with, you know, this so-called budget crisis. You know, the United States nearly defaulted on its debt obligations. Why? Because of petty politics. One side refusing to agree with the other. And it's just so stupid and so petty. And they're acting as if this doesn't affect other people in the world. And the rest of the world is commenting about how selfish and petty the Americans are. They can't even get together and cooperate with each other. Rather, everyone's after their own self-interest, their own sense gratification. And they're pursuing that at all costs, regardless of who it offends, who it damages. So many of the greatest atrocities in this planet has happened for this very reason. Like, for instance, when Mao first took over China, he wanted to make China the number one industrial producer of the world. So he shifted all the labor force from agriculture to steel production. But in the process, all the agriculture languished, and so it caused hundreds of millions of people to die of starvation. And this is all for sense gratification. All just because he wanted to gratify his senses to become the most powerful person in the world. So because of these demonic propensities, people do extraordinarily ridiculous activities. Another example is that's very instructive, is that of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was actually in the same boat as these demigods were when he first began his austerities. However, after offering his prayers, after having darshan of Lord Vishnu, and then Lord Vishnu places conch shell upon Dhruva Maharaj's head and imparted all transcendental knowledge to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj immediately realized how foolish his desires were. And then in his prayers, it's actually very wonderful, Dhruva Maharaj's prayers. I'll just read them in brief, the translation, because Dhruva Maharaj characterizes this mentality perfectly. So, after he had darshan, Dhruva Maharaj was, and after Lord Vishnu granted him all these benedictions, grants him the benediction of the pole star and of having, you know, perfect senses that wouldn't degrade over the course of time, and ruling the entire universe for 36,000 years. And not only that, but also granting that his brother would be killed and his mother would be killed. So even after the fulfillment of every single desire he ever had, he was feeling unsatisfied. And so Maitreya Muni, Vidura was asking Maitreya, you know, why is it that Dhruva was feeling unsatisfied? So Maitreya replied, Dhruva Maharaj's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly aggrieved, and thus when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from this material world. By the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. And it goes on to describe how Dhruva Maharaj was thinking. Dhruva Maharaj was thinking, to endeavor to be situated in the shade of the lotus feet of the Lord is not an ordinary task, because even the great brahmacharis headed by Sanandana, who practiced Ashtanga Yoga and trance, attained the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet only after many, many births. Within 6 months, I achieved the same result. Yet due to my thinking differently from the Lord, I fell down from my position. Alas, just look at me. I am so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can immediately cut the chain of the repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I prayed for things which are perishable. The purport to this particular verse is very significant. Prabhupada talks about the importance of not having material desires as we engage in devotional service. Prabhupada sums it up at the very end of the purport saying, otherwise we will have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. So when we're engaging in devotional service, if we're harboring these materialistic desires for sense gratification, at the end, when we actually get the result, we'll be lamenting just like Dhruva Maharaj, because we had impure desires as we were executing our devotional service. Since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have come down again, they are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of the sage Narada. I was under the influence of the illusory energy, being ignorant of the actual facts. I was sleeping on her lap, under a vision of duality. I saw my brother as my enemy, and falsely I lamented within my heart, thinking, they are my enemies. It is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but in my case, although I have satisfied the Supersoul of the whole universe, I have prayed only for useless things. My activities were exactly like treatment given to a person who is already dead. Just see how unfortunate I am. For in spite of meeting the Supreme Lord, who can cut one's link with birth and death, I have prayed for the same conditions again. Because of my state of complete foolishness and my paucity of pious activities, although the Lord offered me His personal service, I wanted material name, fame, and prosperity. My case is just like that of the poor man, who when he has satisfied a great emperor who wanted to give him anything he might ask, out of ignorance he asked only for a few broken grains of husked rice. So that's Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, though, had the intelligence to realize what his defects were, what his faults were, and his desires as he was executing devotional service. Whereas the demigods, headed by Lord Indra, they don't even have that intelligence. You know, so time after time after time, Indra continuously keeps making the same mistakes, because his lust for sense gratification is so strong that it bewilders his intelligence time and again. So Krishna continuously, because he is a devotee, he does desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet his desire is polluted with material desires. So Krishna keeps coming to reprimand him, to keep him in check, put him back on the straight course in life. Indra went even so far even as to try to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, kill all Krishna's dearmost, topmost, most confidential devotees out of lust, Because Krishna convinced his father to stop the Indra Puja. Because Krishna was saying, you know, is this a sacrifice done merely out of tradition? Or is this a sacrifice done according to Vedic injunction? And this is a very important point also. Because oftentimes things are done simply out of local tradition. If something is done so many times, then oftentimes people use that as an excuse. Well, you know, it's been done already so many times, we've been doing it for so many years. As if that makes it right. As if duration of time justifies the activity. You know, oftentimes even devotees can fall into that trap where someone does something and then based upon that one bad example, other devotees follow suit and say, well, he was doing it and, you know, he was doing it and it's been going on for so long. So that's why it really takes strict adherence to sadhu, shastra, and guru. By adhering to these three checks and balances, then we can evaluate actually what our activities are, how it is that we're performing our devotional service, what are our motivations, what are our desires and our goals, and then we can be kept on the right track. Actually, in some of the purports to various verses that I just read in relation to Dhruva Maharaj, Prabhupada went so far as to say in the purport that anyone who is striving after sense gratification is demoniac in nature. Which is a rather, you know, bold and broad statement. By such black and white transcendental vision, even the demigods could be considered as demonic to one degree or another. Because even though they are engaging in devotional service, still, their desires are petty. Their desires are for their own selfish sense gratification. So just to put things in context, I thought it'd be nice to read what Krishna says about the nature of the demoniac. In the 16th chapter, text 7 through 15, Krishna explains the demoniac nature. I remember the first time that I read the 16th chapter, I wasn't really so much into Krishna consciousness yet. And I thought that, wait a minute, you know, how can this be described as demonic activities? This is everything that we were taught when we were growing up, what's positive and what we should strive for. So it came as rather a shock. So Krishna says, those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. Just like nowadays there's so many pseudo-spiritual people who say, it's just the path, you know, you just keep going somewhere. There is no goal, you know, it's just the journey. The journey is the goal. The reason they say that is because they don't know what the goal is. They don't know what's to be done, what's not to be done. They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it's produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Within the United States, it's actually illegal to teach anything other than scientific atheism. There have been school districts that have tried to do this, different teachers that have tried, but every time they try, it's shot down. Even though this so-called separation of church and state, but yet now this church of scientific atheism, is dominating the state. Yet, people are so foolish they don't realize that this is just another belief. It's not actually anything that's factual. But yet somehow it's gained a monopoly on our national educational system. And they've gone so far as to make it illegal to teach anything else. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Simple example in recent history, the meltdown of the Fukushima reactor. Nuclear energy is meant for nothing but destruction of the world. Every step of the process of nuclear power is destructive. In the beginning, when they were first researching nuclear power, all the scientists got cancer. In the process of refining all this nuclear products, the plutonium and uranium, it produced so many poisonous byproducts that they don't even know how to contain. They don't even know what to do with it. In the process, they created the bomb, which does nothing but accelerate the death rate. They produce nuclear power that accelerates our advancement of Urugu Karma. And then when these reactors explode, it does nothing but kill more people. Every step of the process destroys the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses of this is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger. They secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demonic person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, and I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So to some degree, we can see that this is the nature of the demigods headed by Indra. Indra is thinking, I am the king of heaven. I am the best enjoyer. He is my enemy, Vritrasura, and I shall kill him. And all my other enemies shall also be killed. So in order to help satisfy his demonic desires, he approaches Vishnu. Rather than asking Vishnu for some transcendental benediction for the ultimate perfection of life, he asks for the gratification of his own senses. And so how does Vishnu respond? As we'll find out later in this chapter, Vishnu tells him, go to, oh shoot, I forget the name. What was that? Didichi, yes. Vishnu says, go to Didichi and ask him for his bones. So Didichi is the spiritual master of Tvashta. He's the one who originally gave the Narayan Kavacha. So it's rather interesting, it just further implicates Indra in this whole chain. He kills Tvashta's son. So Tvashta gets angry and summons this demon. And then, in order to kill the demon that Tvashta summons, he has to kill Tvashta's guru. It's rather interesting. So that's why we should all take this very seriously. These aren't just stories. This isn't just some mythology. This is actual history that actually happened. And it's been recorded for our benefit, so we don't have to repeat it over and over again. So just like Prabhupada said concerning Dhruva Maharaj, we should be very careful not to harbor material sense desires as we execute our Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we'll come to a point to where we also will be lamenting like Dhruva Maharaj once we reach the fruition of our devotional service. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Yes.
Naturally, with the tamasic quality, we have this mode of ignorance. And so rather than approaching it, or at least for someone new studying this philosophy, do you recommend that rather not having the contaminated or the impure thoughts, using them in a way that you don't pray? What's that? Can you hear me?
Sorry.
Hi. Can you hear me without it?
Yeah.
So rather than having the intention there of purifying of yas or practice done consistently and over an extended period of time, the idea that the heart becomes purified, but you can't just go into the devotional service without having the impurity. how do you, but I don't say, okay, Krishna, I really want people to show up, but I'll just maybe say, okay, I wish that. So distinguishing and making that distinction between a wish for something that a material desire that you have, but not making it your intention.
Yeah. No, that's a very good question. The question is, I think this mic was turned down a little bit. Anyway, the question is that how is it that when we're practicing Krishna consciousness, how is it that we just jump to pure devotional service, right? Because when everyone begins, when we first begin practicing, we all start with some material desires, like you gave the example of wanting at your 6 o'clock yoga class for 50 people to be there. You know, but at the same time, when we wake up in the morning, we're desiring, you know, we're not interested in wealth and fame and, you know, all these other things. What comes to my mind is just like with the chanting of the holy names. Inevitably, when we begin chanting, we all begin chanting in Nama Parad, which is offensive chanting. Because we're somehow or another, because if we really study these offenses, it actually gets very subtle. You know, like for instance, the 10th offense, maintaining material desires, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. That's an offense against the holy names. So, and that goes very, very deep, because even through the process of Narta Navritti, we're still harboring material desires. That's what anartas are. So as we can see, it takes a very long time to, or it can take a long time, to come to the point of Namabhas. Namabhas is chanting without offenses. It's not Shudanam, it's not purely chanting, but at the same time we're not making offenses. It's described that Namabhas is the stage of liberation, Brahma-bhuta, which also corresponds in the progress of devotional service to Come on, brain. To Nishta. Nishta comes immediately after Anartha Nivritti. And Nishta is also the point of Brahmabhuta. It's the stage of liberation. And the recommendation that's been given by the previous acharyas for how to get out of namaparad chanting, you know, offensive chanting, is simply more chanting. You know, all of us, we all come from an impure state, and we're bound to make offenses, we're bound to be harboring material desires in the beginning stages. What's required is patience and determination, you know, to be able to push through all these material desires and not get bogged down, not get drowned in the weight of self-loathing, like, oh my God, I'm so impure, I'll never make it, I'm so demoniac. You know, these different recommendations that are given in the shastras, they're there to remind us of what we need to strive for. You know, to help encourage us to let go as much as possible. It's not just black and white like in Christianity, where it's, you know, if you make one small mistake, then you're just going to burn and suffer forever, for all eternity. You know, these recommendations are here to encourage us to always keep in mind what the ultimate goal is and never lose that. And to always be striving to go towards that ultimate goal. In other words, not to become complacent and stagnate. So, the best course of action is to continue with devotional service. Just keep practice, keep your practice up. And over the course of time, all these different impurities will be purified from your heart. But there's other personalities here who could answer this much better than myself, like maybe Dhanavir Maharaj would like to comment, or... Hare Krishna. Archita Prabhu?
I concur, it was a wonderful answer. But she did make a practical, or give a practical example from her own life of teaching yoga and wanting success there. So that's okay. Whatever your profession is, whether you're accountant, policeman, yoga teacher, you should want to be successful. But the way to purify that is to, A, Krishnaize your activities as a yoga instructor or policeman. In other words, you can have pictures of Krishna in your office, chant when you get a break. And also dedicate at least some percentage of the fruit. Obviously, you're allowed to maintain yourself by your profession, but whatever's left over, and you know honestly what's left over, at least some portion of that should be engaged in Krishna conscious activities. And Maharaj spoke about that nicely in his class. The Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas are the most worthy recipients of charity because they use it to help others. So if you're working and you're successful to whatever degree, even if it's a small degree, like Kolavan Sridhar, how much was he making? Practically nothing, but he was dedicating a huge percentage of his income to worshipping Mother Ganges. So you use some percentage of your income in a practical way in Krishna consciousness. Donate it for festivals, use it to buy things for the deities, and that will purify your existence, will purify your activities, and the heart will change gradually. We should also remember that patience is one of the activities that we have to really pursue. Be very patient in your Krishna conscious advancement.
Thank you. One last question.
I mean, I guess I just had like a quick comment also, just kind of, you know, based on that, on her question before. It's just like, you know, if you're going to wash a pair of clothes or something even, it's like, dirty clothes, you don't just like dip them in the water real quick and take them out because it's still going to be dirty. It's like, you know, you have to submerge them in there and continuously, you know, wash it and let it soak in. And, you know, it's the whole process of like agitation that loosens it up over time. You know, it's like, and I mean, you know, and this is kind of, I mean, this was something that I remember from Christianity is like, you know, the blood of Jesus washes away the sins from, whatever you happen to come there with, you know, it like washes it clean, but it's like, you know, it takes patience. And as soon as you go back out, It's like the example of the elephant that bathes in the river and then throws dirt on itself. I mean, in the Bible, they had another example about a dog that returns to its vomit, which is, you know, kind of similar. But anyhow, yeah.
Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.